Welcome back to the Bob Harden Show. And now here's your host, Bob Harden.
Thanks so much for joining us here on the show. We're providing you news and commentary rooted in a commitment to individual liberty, personal responsibility, limited government, and the rule of law. Coming up, going to visit with Jim McTagg, former Barron's Washington Bureau Chief. Right now we have with us Mark Shulman. Mark is the founder and publisher of a terrific multimedia website. It's called HistoryCentral.com. I hope you check it out. Great for kids of all ages, including you and I. He's also in Tel Aviv, living in Tel Aviv now for several months, and of course right in the midst of the problem over there. Mark, thank you so much for joining us here on the show.
Always a pleasure, Bob.
Thank you, Mark. So let's start off with a discussion of what's happening with Israel, Hamas, the West Bank, everything that's going on over there.
Everything that's going on. Okay, so right now Israeli forces are deep inside of Gaza. They've surrounded Gaza City itself and are slowly but surely putting pressure on Hamas by slowly attacking their installations, trying to get them to come out of their tunnels and kill them when they come out of the tunnels and attack. It's a slow process, primarily because Israel doesn't want to fall into the traps that Hamas has set up for them.
Yeah.
So they've done, by any standards, relatively well in terms of casualties. They had one case where a armored car that should have been close to indestructible, something happened and 11 people inside were killed. But since then, almost, you know, Israel's lost an additional 19 soldiers, which is a lot, but very little compared to what was expected to take place until now.
Hmm.
And the goal is to get to put enough pressure on Hamas and to eventually root them out and kill them all, quite honestly. And the other question is, of course, the hostages.
Yeah,
it does not seem Hamas is interested in negotiating on any terms that, other than we remain in power, leave us alone, which is not one of the options so that's of course a big issue. I've spoken to a number of the families of hostages. What can you say to them? You know, what can you say to a father whose wife and two kids have been taken hostage? Impossible.
Yeah,
it's impossible to put yourself in their shoes, and it's an impossible situation.
You know, Marco, I'd be interested in your reaction, a worldwide reaction. You know, in Washington, D.C., London, other cities around the world, are demonstrations for the liberation of Palestine and, you know, not committing atrocities, blah, blah, blah. I mean, the whole thing seems so orchestrated to me, but I'd love to get your thoughts.
I don't know whether it's orchestrated. Look, you have two factors that are involved in this right now. One, of course, is you have in much of the Western world, over the last 20 years, you've had a rather substantial Muslim immigration.
Mm-hmm.
Some Palestinians or other Muslims from different parts of the Middle East, the Syrian refugees in Europe. You have all of these people, and they tend to be very pro-Palestinian. That's one part of the story. The other part of the story is you have the far left that has put Palestinians up there with, you know, with women's rights, LGBTQ rights, with Black Lives Matter. It's all the same thing. It's something called intersectionality.
Right.
And that exists in the left, and they think they should be supporting, you know, the far left. Look, I have, quite honest with you, a niece who I'm not particularly close to. I don't know how many years I've seen her, but she's on the LGBTQ group of people, and she's, you know, putting out pro Hamas things on her Instagram. My daughter, you know, had a fit and couldn't convince her of anything because she knows best.
Yeah.
Of course, if someone on that in that spectrum was to show up in Gaza, they would just kill them.
Right.
I mean, that's the insanity of it, right? In other words, these people are supporting Hamas. Now, you want to talk about you're in favor of Palestinian rights? I think, you know, even I'm in favor of Palestinian rights. I hope someday they get a state. If they ever deserve it, they should get one.
Right.
But to be talking about supporting Hamas, who's a extremely, I use the word right-wing, but right-wing is not the right word, extremely Muslim extremist group,
right,
who practices, you know, believes in Sharia law and believes, you know, literally anybody they find who's practicing gay or lesbian or anything in between, they kill.
Yeah.
I mean, you're supporting these people?
Yeah.
I mean, women, what rights do women? It makes no sense. But because of this idea of intersectionality and everything else, it's all been tied together.
I understand I understand the head of Hamas met with the Ayatollah in Iran to
the political head of Hamas, who's in Qatar, went to Iran and met with the head of Iran. Look, they're trying to get support. They've been surprised by two things, I think, that this whole thing has surprised them. Number one, they did not expect the level of the Israeli response that has come. In other words, they thought that one more time they could get Israel to just come and go and, they'll fire a few times, they'll bomb, and that'll be the end of it. They did not realize the determination of Israel at this point to basically eliminate Hamas. And that's clearly number one. Number two, they had expected more support from Hezbollah.
Yeah.
Now, Hezbollah is the Iranian-backed militia that semi-controls. I won't say controls, but semi-controls Lebanon. It has tens of thousands of fighters in Lebanon, and it has 100,000-plus rockets aimed at Israel from Lebanon. So they were expecting more support from them. What that means is that the Hezbollah has, more than anything else, been doing little bombings, small missiles, mostly, almost in all cases, aimed at Israeli military personnel along the front.
Mm-hmm.
Although at this point they've been firing significant missiles at a town called Kiryat Shmona, which is on the border, but has been evacuated. All the border settlements and cities on the border have all been evacuated because of the fact that they're so close to the border. And while Iron Dome works, it's very hard for Iron Dome to be effective with 10 seconds warning, so to speak.
Right.
So the reality is that we're seeing more and more daily action in terms of Hezbollah. But Nasrallah, who's the head of Hezbollah, spoke on Friday, and everyone was waiting for his speech. And his speech basically said, Hamas decided on its own. It didn't discuss with us when they launched this attack, and therefore we're not responsible for them. We'll try to help them a little bit, but we're not really, at this point in any case, we're not really willing to drag Lebanon into a war that will result in the destruction of Beirut. That's what seems to be the message. Of course, the people are arguing he just did that to make us all feel better, and it's the same way of misdirection. But so far that's been the case, and I think the Hamas has been quite disappointed. And the Iranians also, they've used their militia in Iraq and Syria to attack U.S. bases.
Yeah.
I think there have been 29 attacks on U.S. bases in the last 2 weeks. But again, the U.S. bases also have defenses, and there were a number of wounded personnel, but no one was killed amongst all the attacks. And also, of course, they've gotten the Houthis in Yemen, who are sponsored by Tehran, to fire a couple of missiles at Israel. They fired missiles. They fired remote aircraft, unmanned aircraft. The missiles, for the first time ever, Israel used its highest level missile defense system, which is designed to destroy ballistic missiles, and it worked.
Yeah.
It's an expensive way to bring down a missile, but it's good to know that it works. Let's put it that way.
Absolutely, Mark. Mark, we need to take a little break. Can you stick around?
Absolutely, Bob.
All right, we're going to have more here on The Bob Harden Show on the Bob Harden Broadcasting Network.
Stay tuned for more of The Bob Harden Show here on the Bob Harden Broadcasting Network.
Are you looking to buy or sell a home? Make it a convenient and stress-free experience by calling the dynamic and trustworthy husband and wife team of Megan and Matt Chionis with Gulf Coast International Properties. Find out about their unique and complimentary post-closing concierge services not offered by other area agents. Matt and Megan Chionis give you the competitive advantage to command a premium price for your property. They personally attend all showings, create a marketing strategy for your property, and offer that complimentary concierge service to your potential buyer. This hands-on approach has helped them set several sales records in Pelican Bay and many at near-record prices. Megan and Matt Chionis understand that as an affluent buyer-seller, your needs and desires are unique. You deserve this level of service. Megan and Matchionis are passionate about the Naples lifestyle, and they want you to enjoy it too. Call Megan and Matchionis with Gulf Coast International Properties at 239-269-5310. That's 239-269-5310. You have questions about your retirement? Ameriprise Private Wealth Advisor Jason Nardella with Nardella Financial Group, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, LLC, can help. With the exclusive Confident Retirement Approach, you'll work together to develop a retirement roadmap to get you where you want to go. Call Nardella Financial Group today at 239-325-1041. That's 239-325-1041. Office is located at 9015 Stratistel Court, Suite 103, Naples, Florida. The Confident Retirement Approach is not a guarantee of future financial results. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
Welcome back to the Bob Harden Show. And now here's your host, Bob Harden.
Thanks so much for joining us here on the show. It's brought to you in part by the Foundation for Government Accountability. They get the politics and know the policies. They help prepare elected officials to have winning strategies in the legislature. And you can find out more by visiting the website, thefga.org. Coming up, we're going to be visiting with John Middlemore, editor-at-large at fee.org. Right now, we continue the conversation with Mark Shulman, the founder and publisher of a terrific multimedia website. It's called HistoryCentral.com. Again, Mark, thank you so much for joining us here on the show.
Always a pleasure.
Thank you, Mark. Let's move to Ukraine. What's going on?
Well, Ukraine, the war has pretty much gone to a point of stalemate. The Ukrainians are still making small progress in the south. The Russians have tried an advance in the north, and they've been totally destroyed. So what we're seeing in this war is that the side that's doing defense has been relatively successful, let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
The offense is much more difficult. It may be saying something about modern warfare when two armies are equipped with high-tech weaponry, I'm not sure. But both sides have ground to some version of a stalemate for the moment. The Ukrainians have all sorts of ideas of different tactics. We'll have to see. The Russians are of course, trying to get more troops to join, which is a difficulty in Russia these days. So we stand right now pretty much, I would have to say, at a stalemate, or not quite a stalemate, a little bit. The Ukrainians are still making some small progress, but no breakthroughs.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see where it goes.
Yeah. I read a report that one soldier, I don't know if he had a high position or not, saying that, you know, we're losing the war, and I'm talking about Ukraine now. We're losing the war. We're just not making any progress. Any comments?
No, I mean, look, they're not losing the war. I mean, let's put it this way. They would have lost the war if Russia would have conquered Kiev.
Yeah.
So Russia has not succeeded in conquering any more of Ukrainian land. Their high point was about 3 months into the war, and Ukraine managed to take back some of the areas that were conquered. So you can't say Ukraine is losing the war.
Yeah,
it's not succeeding in pushing the Russians out of the rest of Ukraine. So losing the war would definitely not be a correct statement.
Okay,
it's not. You know, look, winning the war is continues to be the fact that Kiev still stands, so to speak. Kiev is still free. Kiev is still, you know, still not under Russian control. And areas that Russia has taken control of, they've, you know, taken the people out. They've taken the children away. I mean, they've pulled the Nazis, you know, again and again and again.
So it wouldn't surprise me, though, if soldiers on both sides were discouraged about what's going on.
Well, of course they are. I mean, yeah. Hey, listen, soldiers always want victory and quickly. They want to get back to their families. They want to go back to their lives.
Right.
No question about that. There's no one happy to be fighting a war anywhere in the world, except I guess there's some of these professional soldiers who just love war. But let's leave those people aside for the moment.
Yeah.
Both, you know, Ukraine is a citizen army.
Yeah.
Russia is an army that's been drafted, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody is happy to fight this war at this point. And this is all Putin's idea of conquering, and You know, maybe one day he'll have a heart attack, and that will end the whole story. Because the war will end the day Putin dies.
Yeah. So we have another onset of the freezing of the winter season right now, which we've helped to bring things to a stalemate for a while.
Maybe. We don't really know. You know, it's not it's actually the period that comes to a halt more than anything else is the in-between period. Because when if things get really cold, then the land is frozen and things can take place. It's really when things are muddy and very difficult to maneuver. Again, we don't know what this winter is going to look like. So far, the winter has been, I mean, not the winter, the autumn has been surprisingly mild, both in Europe and the Middle East. So, who knows?
Who knows, indeed. So, report that scores of people have died in an earthquake in Nepal. I wonder if you had any comments.
Just the fact that, again, you know, earthquakes seem to happen in some of the places, the poorest places on Earth.
Yeah.
We see them in other places too, but we've so many earthquakes and natural disasters happen to the people who can least deal with it.
Yeah.
And that's just sad. Nothing you can say about it. It's, you know, an act of nature. We can't control it. But like I said, it's, you know, both flooding and earthquakes and all those things. Floods, it sort of makes more sense that people who are poor are living in places that aren't as well protected. Earthquakes, you know, I guess they don't stand up to the building code of San Francisco or L.A., but still, it's just sad.
It is sad indeed. In fact, Acapulco had a very severe earthquake, and it was just the devastating...
Hurricane. It was a hurricane in Acapulco.
I'm sorry, it is a hurricane, yes.
Hurricane was one of the more amazing things, you know, if I say amazing, but terrible things in nature. Here you had a storm that in the evening was a tropical storm.
Yeah.
And in the morning, when it hit Acapulco, it was a Category 5 hurricane.
Yeah.
I mean, just think in Florida, if you went to sleep at night, there's a tropical storm out there, you know, we're not gonna play golf tomorrow because it's going to be a tropical storm. And you wake up in a Category 5 hurricane in the morning.
Well, I'll tell you, that was kind of what happened in history. That's kind of what happened with Ian here. It was
right, but not not to this extreme. Let's put it that way.
Yeah,
they've never had a situation where a storm went from tropical storm to hurricane Category 5 in 12 hours.
Especially in the Pacific, it was an amazing event. What's going on in Pakistan?
So Pakistan is a story right now of Pakistan decided to expel all illegal migrants. Illegal migrants in Pakistan's case are almost all Afghani refugees that came both immediately when Afghanistan fell to the Taliban now, or came over the course of the fighting over the last X number of years. Many of them have made their lives in Pakistan over the years, but the Pakistani government, sort of in response to a number of terrorist attacks by Islamists, said, well, the solution is let's push all these 1.7 million people out, and basically they're literally taking them to the border and saying, good luck in Afghanistan. Remember that Afghanistan, including, you know, all sorts of people who really fear for their lives, women, feminist activists, and all sorts of people who the Taliban government doesn't love.
Right.
So it's a real problem. It's not getting very much world attention, which is a shame, because, again, this is a really, you know, this, A, was sudden. B, not enough time even to try to arrange alternative places for these people to live in other parts of the world. They're literally being bused to the border of Afghanistan.
Was this part of a political movement in Pakistan?
The move was political in terms of just responding to, you know, I'm going to be strong on terror type situation. There's no movement. There's no anti-immigrant general feeling in Pakistan. I mean, they have 1.7 million I don't remember what the population of Pakistan is, but it's in the hundreds of millions. So it's not a major demographic issue. And they're both Muslims, and so it's not really. It's just a question of, the government's showing it can do something, so it's going to throw out all these people. We have a worldwide problem with refugees everywhere in the world.
Yeah.
That there's almost nowhere in the Northern Hemisphere where there aren't problems of refugees, but here we have a situation even in the more or less Southern Hemisphere where it's taking place as well.
Absolutely. Again, Mark Shulman, the founder and publisher of a terrific multimedia website. It's called HistoryCentral.com. I hope you check it out. Mark, always appreciate your commentary here on the show. Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure, Bob. Have a great week.
You as well. Thank you, Mark. In Tel Aviv, by the way. All right, coming up, we're going to be visiting with John Millamore. He is the editor-at-large at fee.org. That and more right here on The Bob Harden Show on the Bob Harden Broadcasting Network.
Stay tuned for more of The Bob Harden Show here on the Bob Harden Broadcasting Network.